It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. A much more normal Tuesday today. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're live here in Sacramento. I'm in Sacramento anyway.
I'm in Sacramento.
We're both in Sacramento.
We are both.
Congratulations to us. I'm really proud of us. We've made it, and so have the 49ers. They beat the New York Jets 32-19 last night. An impressive all-around game, I thought, from San Francisco. Was it perfect? By no means, but also in week one, you're allowed some mistakes. We talked about that yesterday, just kind of around the NFL. A lot of teams maybe not playing at the level you thought they would, but in the modern NFL, with the way things go now, week one, sometimes week two into week three, are almost treated as preseason games. You take the wins where you can get them. But I thought, aside from just getting a win, I thought the 49ers looked really good last night.
Oh, no, I thought they looked great. There were so many moments where they looked like the team that you think is going to be there in, you know, week eight, week 10, but cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the mistakes that we saw, like very specifically, some of the drops that we saw, some of the just really strange errors that you saw, they'll get cleaned up. And to me, that was about as good a week one as you're going to get, especially with your star running back not there.
Yeah, and we'll get to the running back of it all for sure. But the 49ers, they go on, they score eight consecutive drives after scuffling out of the gate. They punted on their first drive. Their next drive, they go three and out, but they got the great field position because of the forced fumble by Fred Warner and the recovery from Malik Collins. So they get the good field position. But again, three and out, they're kicking a long field goal. They take a 3-0 lead. That's great. But this was against, this was, and then they went on and pulled away for a 32-19 win. They score eight consecutive drives. And this is an opponent that, and we'll get into the Jets later. We're not on a New York radio station, so I don't want to spend too much time on them. But this is a team that a lot of people, a lot of smart football people, have either winning their division, going to the AFC title game, going to the Super Bowl. Some people have them winning the Super Bowl. If the Jets really are a contender, and again, we can dive into the Jets of it all later, but if the Jets really are a contender, if they are going to be a Super Bowl type of team, that makes this 10 times more impressive to me, what we saw from the 49ers last night. Not just that they won, but that they dominated the game in the way they did.
Oh, no, it was a complete domination. Like, the way that you dominated, that they dominated the line was just crazy. Both sides of the ball, but The run game was just crazy. And you know what? For that matter, what they did to Breece Hall was like really, really impressive.
Yeah.
Like he had a couple of nice runs late just to get his yards up a little bit. But even that was like they had stopped him. And I thought they didn't put the pressure on Rodgers that I wanted them to put on Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's kind of like, I don't know. And in the grand scheme of things, there were so many things that they did right. And again, I think the Jets are a good team. I don't know that they're a great team, but they're a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see that throughout the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. But this was a 49ers team that was laser focused and ready. And I think that that's something that, you know, you kind of worried about with all of the chaos of the buildup to the season.
Big time, dude.
Are they ready for the moment? And are they ready for Monday Night Football? And the answer is absolutely they were ready.
You talk about Breece Hall. Breece Hall is one of the probably three or four best backs in the league.
Yes.
Comfortably top five. If you tell every defensive coordinator, hey, you can help, you can hold Breece Hall to 16 carries for 54 yards and a touchdown.
Yep.
Every single one of them is taking it. You have some that might be like, no, we're going to not give up any touchdowns. Okay, that's fine. But 16 for 54, like that's how much he's going to impact the game. I think a lot of teams would take that. But you mentioned the 49ers offensive line in their run game. There were, and you know me, negative Nancy over here. Negative Nick. The way I didn't see a path to the if you told me the 49ers won 32-19, I'd be like, oh, okay. Jets turned it over a couple times, okay, I can see it. But if you told me that the Niners ran it, what did they go for? 181 yards on 37 carries before the final kneel down.
Oh yeah.
would have said no chance, dude. Either that or the Jets were super banged up up front. Like that's a Jet, that was their calling card last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets had one of the if not the best defense in the league last year. Robert Saleh had that group playing really well. It's Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed and Quinnen Williams. And I know they didn't have Hassan Reddick. That's obviously a big loss. But this is a loaded defense. It's really sound. CJ Mosley in the second level. They are so sound, just like we know a Robert Saleh defense to be. We saw it here in San Francisco. And I didn't think there was any way that we were going to come out of last night's game going, man, the Niners just took it to them on both sides of the ball. They were the aggressor. They were the more physical team. I thought it would be a physical game, but I thought from both sides, I thought these teams would look really evenly matched. And maybe by week, maybe if they meet again in the Super Bowl, maybe they will be evenly matched by then. But they weren't in week one. And these are two teams that a lot of people expect to contend for the Super Bowl, and the 49ers looked like that last night, and the Jets did not.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the offensive line just kind of shoving them around. I mean, what we saw from a guy who, like, realistically, like, Jordan Mason had never rushed 28 times in a college game or in a high school game. I mean, this was like you just kept feeding this one dude, and the way that the offensive line just manhandled the Jets' defensive line. And then at one point we have Trent Williams goes back to the locker room, gets an IV, and comes back out and just like continues to dominate. It was, to me, like watching the offensive line, there were some mistakes. There was a hold.
Yeah, sure.
You know, again, that's the, if we're going to like, you know, talk about like some of the issues with Colt McKivitz.
Wasn't perfect.
No. Like he makes errors that are silly.
Sure.
But still, I thought that like overall, just to go out there and beat up, show the dominance of the front of the offensive line and push another team around for four quarters was pretty crazy.
Yeah, man. I directly mentioned yesterday that Chris Forster, the 49ers offensive line coach, said that, it might have been a couple days ago, whenever we mentioned this on the show, he said that Trent Williams is going to play a full workload, a full snap load, unless we play like 80 snaps, and then there might be a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't think there's any way the Niners are getting anywhere close to that number of snaps. Jets defense way too good. Trent Williams is going to comfortably play the whole game because the Niners aren't going to, they're going to be in the 70 offensive snaps.
That's a lot.
That's so many. that doesn't even account for the plays that were called back due to penalty. So overall, really, really impressive. And that impressive performance headlined by Jordan Mason, the undrafted free agent signing from 3 years ago, 28 carries, 147 yards, a touchdown. He also had a catch for 5 yards. Career night in every facet. I think his previous career high in carries was 11. I don't want to say this was unexpected. It was unexpected from the standpoint of, I think we all thought Christian McCaffrey was going to play, and we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch Jordan Mason run throughout his career, whether it was as a rookie in 2022 or last year in mop-up duty when he would get on the field, it was really clear, hey, man, this guy should probably touch the ball more.
Yeah.
This guy is a hot. This guy is hard to bring down.
Mm-hmm.
He runs angry. He can get vertical. He can get east to west when he needs to. He's got great vision. He's one cut and go. He finishes runs. I thought that there was always a case to make for Jordan Mason to get more touches. And last night, it's hard to make a louder case than that.
No, I think he just ran angry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you're hoping that you get from a running back. You're hoping that the guy understands a moment, that he steps onto the field, and he doesn't try to do what Christian McCaffrey does. He does what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows what his identity is. I thought there were a couple of plays where he cut the ball back early, way too early, and got tackled instead of following the offensive line. I thought he probably left like 15, 20 yards on the field, but that doesn't really matter. He was so impressive, like from start to finish, and just the toughness that he played with, the sort of smash mouth brand that he brought that the Niners really haven't had. Because while McCaffrey is an outstanding runner, you don't feel like smash mouth from McCaffrey. This was like a violent runner, like literally clawing and fighting for every yard. And I thought it was super impressive to watch a young player just step up into a role and figure it out.
Yeah, and that's not to say Christian McCaffrey's not physical or won't finish a run, but that is like Jordan Mason's style.
Yeah, yeah.
Jordan Mason is seeking contact. He wants to hit somebody. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I thought he spent a lot of time running into his own offensive line last night. That's something that he's going to have to fix moving forward.
That's just patience.
You can't leave yards on the field because you're slowing yourself down running into your own dudes.
Yeah.
So like you said, I think that's just a matter of, he had 83 career carries coming into last night, and he had more than a quarter of that just last night.
Oh no, it was
he had 40 rushing attempts last season. That's 12 fewer than he had last night in one game.
I think it's interesting too, like we kept hearing it throughout the night that they were comparing like the performance that he was having to what we've seen from not only Kyle Shanahan, but Mike Shanahan, and sort of the one cut runner,
mm-hmm.
the guy who just gets to the right spot and then boom, he's gone. And, you know, they brought up Terrell Davis. They brought up some of the other guys that both father and son have had in this type of system that they look for. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Shanahan is that there is like a brand of runner that he's always looking for. And again, I don't think Christian McCaffrey necessarily fits the overall brand of runner that Shanahan usually looks for. He's just one of the best players in the NFL.
Yep.
And so you're like, okay, like we'll figure out how to
yeah.
to use him mm-hmm. in our system in the right way, you know, yes. all the pass catches and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I thought it was interesting that they were, you know, when they needed to go away from, or when they needed like sort of a passing down,
mm-hmm.
that they used Kyle Juszczyk a little bit more than maybe he was in the game plan for if McCaffrey would have been there.
Yeah.
As opposed to just using Mason. And I thought that their ability to sort of move all those guys around. We had the play like in the early third quarter, and I'm sitting here watching, you know, it's a play where Juwan Jennings kind of tweaked his ankle, right?
Yeah.
And he goes down.
Insane that wasn't called a hip drop tackle, by the way.
Yeah.
They outlawed that play very specifically this offseason.
He goes to the sideline, right?
Uh-huh.
And they show him, he's kind of limping, he's got his helmet off, his red hair. Mm-hmm. And then he walks by Ayuk and Debo.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, wait, Ayuk, Debo, and Jennings are all off the field. Like, mm-hmm. what are they doing? And then next thing you know, I'm like, well, this has got to be a run.
Mm-hmm.
Purdy drops back and he passes the ball. And you're like, they just went out there and ran an offensive play where they threw the ball
mm-hmm.
without Ayuk, Debo, Jennings, or McCaffrey. Like what? How does that even work? And boom, there they are. They're just moving the ball down the field. Yep. It just kind of showed you the system was on display as yeah. much as the individual was on display. Like really, really impressive.
That's one of the things that Kyle Shanahan I think does so well too, is, and that's part of what makes him special as an offensive coach. Say what you will about him as a game manager or whatever, and we'll get to game management stuff, yeah. I promise. We have nitpicks later in the show. Vibes are good, but we've got some nitpicking to do a little bit later on. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. But it's the deception and the ability to run a personnel grouping out on the field and having everything look like a run. The formation looks like a run. The personnel grouping looks like a run. Even the way the play starts is going to look like a run. And then, oh, it's a pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, Kyle Juszczyk's wide open. Or, oh, I guess now it's going to be Jacob Cowing was wide open. Or pick random player that you did not even consider being a factor.
Yeah, who's a tight end that actually had a target that I...
Eric Saubert.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even
worst
know.
Throw of the night for Purdy on that one, by the way.
Yeah.
No, we'll...
yeah.
Get to Brock Purdy a little bit later as well. But we got to talk about Christian McCaffrey. If you're going to talk about the Jordan Mason night, evening.
Yes.
It started with pregame. And I don't have the sound here, but Adam Schefter went on the Pat McAfee show. And just very casually dropped that Christian McCaffrey, the Achilles injury isn't new, and that this is part of the calf and Achilles injuries that he sustained in week 17 of last year. And that forced him out of week 18, but then he went on in the playoffs. I believe it was 98%, 91%, and 95% of snaps he played in their three playoff games. Sits out virtually the entire summer. And then is questionable when he does return. The vibe didn't feel great. And you and I talked about, like, wait, there's an Achilles aspect to this? Like, that can't be good. And then Schefter casually going like, oh yeah, he's been dealing with this since December.
Mm.
Like, I'm sorry, what? Like, so that was the first red flag. Here's how all of this started. So I'm sure if you're listening to this program, you are fully aware of how all this played out with McCaffrey getting scratched, Jordan Mason's starter, Jordan Mason dominates, now we're here. But there were some things going on kind of behind the scenes. And I think the 49ers might get in some trouble for this. Maybe.
I'm thinking that they might as well.
So we're going to have Adam Schefter talk to you here. Here's what Adam Schefter reported before the game. So this is breaking news right after the 49ers announced that Christian McCaffrey was going to be out. Here's what Adam Schefter had to say.
The 49ers listed their inactives moments ago, and 49ers standout running back Christian McCaffrey is out tonight. He's not going to be active, came out, did not feel right with the calf, the Achilles. It's been an issue. He was limited in practice last week. The 49ers listed him as questionable. They thought he was going to be able to play. He expressed confidence that he was going to be able to play. People thought it would be a full workload for Christian McCaffrey, but today it just didn't feel right. And so tonight, in the first game of the season, Christian McCaffrey is inactive, and I would expect Jordan Mason to replace him in the starting lineup and to absorb all the carries that Christian McCaffrey would have gotten that he now won't. He is inactive tonight. We'll see whether he can go in week two, Scott.
Okay, so he came out. He tried to give it a go, just couldn't do it. All right, he's going to be scratched, right? Now, remember, Christian McCaffrey told reporters on Friday, after Friday's practice, not concerned about the injury, no doubt I'm going to play. Well, here's more Schefter after he talked to some people with the 49ers.
Well, I spoke to various 49ers officials here, Scott, and what I was able to take away is this. On Friday, Christian McCaffrey pulled himself out of practice. They were not overly concerned. They did not think it was a big deal. They thought and expected that he would be able to go tonight. The issue was he came in today for treatment, and the calf still was tight. Now, let's keep in mind, he basically didn't practice all summer long. It was not just a calf, but it was also his Achilles. So you've got two issues here. And they decided, in the interest of being a long season, to hold him out tonight, not to activate him, to put him on the bench. Jordan Mason is going to start tonight. And not only is Christian McCaffrey out tonight, but there's a real chance he's not going to play on Sunday either.
Okay, so all of this tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Christian McCaffrey pulled himself out of practice on Friday. They list him as questionable on Saturday. He went out there. He tried to give it a go. Got treatment. Calf still tight. You know what? Hey, this is an 18-week season. We're playing for February, not for September. McCaffrey, you're going to sit out this game. Thanks for giving it a go. You were questionable, but that means 50-50 chance of playing, but it's a thumbs down. He's not going to play. Jordan Mason, you're in. That supposedly all happened Monday.
Mm.
By that timeline that Adam Schefter just laid out, Jordan Mason would have found out when, about the time we all did, that he was going to be the 49ers starting running back. Is that right?
Yeah, that's why everyone's like, hey, like, for this kid to go out and do this on such short notice, just finding out that he's going to go out there and play,
right?
And he's going to be this huge, have the starting job.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, look how well he did not knowing.
Even if he didn't hear it 90 minutes before the game like we all did.
Yeah.
He could have heard it a few hours before the game when McCaffrey got treatment and all that. Well, here's now what Jordan Mason said after the game when he was asked when he found out he would be the starter. You're assuming he's going to say right before the game when you all did.
Yep.
That question right there is...
Oh, nope. That's not. That's the wrong one. Here we go. You're assuming he's going to say, I found out when you all did.
That question
right there. Oh, my God. Here we go. Okay, this is fine. The same audio uploaded twice. It's okay. He said, about Friday night. Friday night is when I found out I was going to start.
Friday night. He says it in a post-game interview.
Yes, on the field after the game.
Yes.
So he's fired up. Interviewer says, yo, when did you find out you were going to start? Because the interviewer is expecting him to say, when you did.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the story. Like, wow, what's that like knowing? That turns out not what he was supposed to say, I guess.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because then he went into his press conference.
Yeah.
After the game of his life, you're expecting this presser to be like, dang, this is crazy. First question is, hey, so when did you find out you were going to play?
Yeah.
That question right there is why I'm at. That's why I don't like really talking to media, because you say one thing wrong, and then, you know, I don't know. Just skip that question.
That sounds like, and again, I'm guessing here, that sounds like a player who went into the locker room before going out to his press conference and got reamed for telling the entire nation, I found out on Friday that I was going to start. And then Christian McCaffrey got listed as questionable, even though there was no chance he was playing. I'd been known I was going to start.
It's tough because this is a young guy who has never, ever been in this situation where everyone is asking him questions. Yeah,
this is not Jordan Mason's fault.
This is not his fault at all.
He did nothing wrong here.
He should have been like on his way to that post-game interview. There should have been a PR person from the San Francisco 49ers telling him exactly what not to say and what to say about the injury. Mm-hmm. This is going to come up. This is going to be part of what's happening. Like, look, as someone who has literally covered basketball forever,
sure. Yep.
Like, there are moments in a press conference where someone either says, I don't know, I don't have an update on that yet, or they come out specifically to tell you what the answer is to that specific question. That should have been on a very short list of, hey, if this gets asked, we need you to say you didn't really know until today.
Game time. Yep.
Yeah, until game time, and, you know, found out when you guys did. Like,
yep.
Whatever it is, like, you know, make sure that you're talking. But, like, look, he's not media savvy. I've had young players tell me some of the strangest things you've ever heard, like coming off a court and in the locker room. Like, I asked a player one time, like, how good does it feel like have every shot go in tonight? Like, uh-huh. You had a great performance. And he goes, yeah, you know, make them, miss them. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. You know, just blessed to be here. And, you know, like almost like God bless America. And, you know, thanks.
I would like to go on record right now. It very much does matter if you make or miss.
And
that's the point of the sport.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those moments where you can, like, just flay somebody and just burn them to the ground. Because if that quote got out there,
yeah.
People would be like, dude, you are ambivalent to winning.
Right.
Why are you here? Please leave. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And that's where you do at you have discretion as a reporter to say,
sure.
Okay, do I have an I got you moment here, or should I have a more quiet conversation.
But this isn't even that.
Yeah.
This is in front of everybody.
That's the problem. He's on national television in the post-game interview where he says something that, like, man, you can't reel it back. And again, he's not media savvy. He's like, if coming into this game, he typically would be like the 38th person that you might talk to on the team.
Right. He might have a couple of reporters come over and, man, heck of a night from Christian, huh? But
yeah,
you know, maybe. But nobody wants quotes from the backup running back.
No.
So, again, this is not to blame Jordan Mason. And Tyler Jennings in the chat said they listed him as questionable. So where did the chat go? It was sitting there and then it was gone the second I needed it, naturally. He was on the injury report as questionable, so not sure the 49ers can get in trouble. Here's where, and this is why this matters.
Okay.
Because what Jordan Mason knew or didn't know doesn't ultimately matter. He went out and dominated and was awesome. That's not the reason the Jets struggled. The Jets were going to get beat down, whether it was Christian McCaffrey, Jordan Mason, or otherwise last night. So I don't think that that's the problem here. The only and frankly, if you're all about the gamesmanship of it, okay, that's fine too. But there's the reason that this is getting brought up is because like there are rules here that the NFL is going to enforce, I think.
Okay.
Where if the NFL and the NFL do some sort of investigation, or they might not. They might not care. But with how much money there is in betting and how much betting is involved, Joe Fortenbaugh and Carlin versus Joe was incensed by this as a gambling guy. When a player, if the 49ers listed Christian McCaffrey as questionable,
mm-hmm.
And knew there was no chance he would play, you can appreciate the gamesmanship of that as a fan, and you can be like, wow, yeah, every team should do that. But like, there's literally like, you can't. There's a rule against that. That's like saying, oh, every team should just line up their defensive end right next to the quarterback so when he takes a snap, he can sack him. Like, no, there's a rule against it. That's offsides. You can't do that.
Got it.
So that's why this matters. And it's not, they're not going to lose draft picks. They're not going to forfeit the game. They're not going to suspend anybody. No, they're going to get hit with a fine, and that'll be what it is. But that's why this matters. Because if they knew for a fact that Christian McCaffrey was either out or doubtful, then that should have been the designation. But it sounds like, based on what Jordan Mason said, that it was a lot less than 50-50 that Christian McCaffrey was going to play.
Yeah, and I think that there people should know that like designations have a percentage attached to them.
Correct.
So I don't know if they're the identical thing as the NBA, but in the NBA, if you're questionable, it's a 50-50 chance you're going to play. If you're probable, it's 75-25. If you're doubtful, it's 25-75 mm-hmm. that you're going to play. And if you're out, you're out.
Yeah. Yeah. NFL, same thing. They just 86 the probable. Probable doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why this, and Kyle Shanahan tried to do some damage control after and say, no, we told him to be ready to start, and maybe Bobby Turner, the running backs coach, told him he was going to start to fire him up, you know, to try and get him pumped up, but no, we didn't know until today that, so maybe the NFL is going to take Kyle Shanahan at their word and believe that the player just was excited and heard differently or whatever, but that's the only reason any of this matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's being discussed. But I don't think it had an effect on the outcome. I don't think it had an effect on the way the 49ers played. I don't think it had an effect on the way Jordan Mason played. He was awesome. The 49ers kicked the Jets' ass. That's the thing that matters.
I totally agree. And I hope it doesn't take away from what just happened, because this was a phenomenal game. And
oh, definitely. It
was absolutely dominant. And I also feel bad for a young player who feels like he may have messed up after really his career game. Like, yeah, you want him to
that
be able to, like...
That press conference was sad.
It was, man. Like just, like, very sad and very frustrating to see a player who should have been just feeling it and, like, super excited about what just happened, but wasn't allowed to because of a slip.
Yeah, tough way for Jordan Mason to end his night. But what does his emergence mean for the 49ers going forward? We'll talk about that. We got to talk about Aaron Rodgers. Is he washed? Is he cooked? We'll talk about that. Brock Purdy, Brandon Ayuk's drops, tons to get into from the 49ers win last night over the Jets, and a little bit of Kings news coming up as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, hanging out with you until noon here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
I'm sure we could figure it out.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, welcome back in. Sorry, chatty house. I turned the mics off at the break because if you're watching on Twitch and YouTube, we just hang out through the breaks and we'll chat.
Yeah.
I forgot to turn the mics back on. We had to talk about an off-air thing real quick.
Yes.
And I never turned them back on.
Oh, okay. I thought we were just ignoring everyone.
No, I would never do that.
Yeah.
I would never do that. 49ers 32, New York Jets 19. Jordan Mason, the story of last night, he was outstanding. 28 carries, 147 yards, a touchdown. The most carries by a 49ers running back in the Kyle Shanahan era.
Mm.
The most carries by a 49ers running back since Frank Gore had 31 back in 2011.
A lot. They don't do that anymore.
No, that's not usually a thing teams do that much anymore. I don't know that I saw that this is a question you wrote down, and I heard some radio programs talking about this, and I saw it on TV today too, about how this now devalues what Christian McCaffrey provides to the 49ers.
I don't know that it devalues as much.
We need to slam the brakes on that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot. Okay. Just because another running back is good in the system does not mean that Christian McCaffrey is now somehow like, oh, yeah, no, he's just a run-of-the-mill guy. Like, that's definitely not what the case is here.
No. But I do think that in a 17-game season with a running back that is in his late 20s, that there is going to come a moment where you do need to share the wealth and you need to take some of the pressure off of McCaffrey to really shoulder all of the load. And for me, if you've got a guy who can get you 5 to 8 carries per week,
mm-hmm.
and take some of the stress off mm-hmm. of McCaffrey, keep him more 15 to 17 carries, mm-hmm. and keep him fresh for not only the full 17 games, but you hope is another 3 or 4 games after that, then that would be prudent. I mean, for me, I was a bit shocked to watch one guy carry the ball 28 times, and I kept wondering, is there like no one else active? Like, they can't bring someone else in? They did bring in the rookie running back for one play, and then Shanahan called a timeout and they swapped him back out.
So funny.
It was like oh,
this is,
no.
But this is kind of what we see in a spot where Kyle Shanahan, and this is another little gripe I have with Kyle Shanahan. You'll see a coach like Andy Reid. Andy Reid's not the only one, but he stands out to me right now. Where in that spot, he's going, all right, rookie, you're up. We got Jordan Mason. He's at 21 carries. He's gonna get a couple plays off. We're moving these guys around in the run game. You are now gonna take on that role. Here you go.
Yeah,
but he doesn't trust him.
Oh no, that was clear.
He'd rather ride the Jordan Mason mobile until the wheels fall off, instead of, hey, we're gonna give Isaac Garendo a carry. We're gonna give him one carry. No, he would rather give Jordan Mason 28. And that's how I think this is going to continue going as long as Christian McCaffrey is out, because we heard from Adam Schefter earlier say that there's a strong possibility he misses week 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that's the case and Christian McCaffrey's out week 2, I think you're going to see 25 plus Jordan Mason carries again.
Yeah, I kind of felt like when we hit the 28 number, and don't the Niners play a bunch in the first 3 weeks of the season? Like, isn't their schedule slightly compacted?
Just because of the short turnaround here. So they go Monday night to 10 a.m. road start.
Okay, and then
next
week.
But then they're back to Rams?
Who were they saying was playing 3 times in the first 11 days? Is that the Jets? They have a Thursday night game coming up?
Oh, that might be the case. Yeah, the Niners play September 9th, 15th, and 22nd.
Okay, so they're going to have the proper spacing. Yeah. I thought when we got to like 22 carries, ooh, and it was still like you could tell that they were going to keep running Mason.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for me, that was a moment where I'm like, okay, well, maybe McCaffrey's not that far away. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to go out there and just run this kid until the wheels fall off in this particular game and not at least give, I mean, you could have given Kyle Juszczyk a couple of carries. Just right. To kind of lighten the load just a little bit.
Theoretically, you could.
Yeah.
But Kyle Shanahan has given us no evidence, unless it is Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman, and it's 3 dudes that he's like, I trust every single one of these guys. This is running back by committee. Mm-hmm. Fantasy owners are going to hate me because I am not letting you know who RB1 is. It's going to be 8, 10, or 12 carries, and that's how it's going to be. But if there's a player that he wants to lean on, he's going to do that. There aren't going to be opportunities for players he doesn't trust.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I just, like, when I was watching this game, I just kept thinking, man, it's just a huge workload to put on a young guy who, and the success was there, mm-hmm. and he should have even had more success. We had the holding penalty on Debo, which I thought was, like, trash.
That was so silly.
That was such a trash call.
It was the right call, though. It was trash on Debo for holding a player who had nothing to do with the play.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you cannot do that.
I guess. I just didn't think it was that egregious. And then you bring up Debo, and that was the other thing that I... like, what are we doing there? Like, even, you know, my son sitting next to me and he's like, man, I don't mind Debo running the ball, but why is he running between the tackles? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of have that same question.
Because if you run outside every single time, then
I guess
it's not super effective.
I guess, like, but you were running the other guy up the middle the whole time. You're running Mason up the middle. And so, like, some variance there. I just...
Do you know why, actually, now that you say that? Because Javon Kinlaw plays for the Jets.
Yeah.
And Javon Kinlaw stinks at football. In relation to defensive tackles in the NFL, he stinks. In relation to me, he's one of the greatest players who's ever lived.
Yeah.
But in the scope of NFL football, Javon Kinlaw is not very good, and the 49ers are moving him around. He had a really, really bad night. And I think that's kind of why. They thought there was going to be room to run in the middle.
Okay.
That's what I think. But to your point, Debo Samuel lines up in the backfield 10 times. I think he got 8 carries. It wasn't a secret what was happening when Debo was lined up in the backfield.
No.
That's the bigger problem to me.
Yeah, my issue is, like, 6 of those carries came, like, they were just straight up rushes up the middle. Mm-hmm. And you know he's going to get popped. And again, it's week 1 of a 17-game season or a 20-something game season. And I don't want my star wide receiver to get hit like that in week 1 when I know that I'm going to need him down the road. So
you also need to, I get it. You also need to win the game, though.
No,
and if he's the running back that you trust, yeah, to what 8 carries is about, kind of what you're asking for to if you're going to spell the starting running back, okay, yeah, 8-10 carries in that range. Like, That said, I 100% agree with you that running Debo up the middle in week 1 is doing so in a playoff game when, hey, we need a yard and we think Debo is the guy to get us this yard. Okay, fine.
Oh, that's fine.
Sure. Like, yeah. Totally. And I know that's why you have CMC and now that's why you have Jordan Mason and all that. But if you think Debo, okay. But week 1 against the Jets, but also at the same time, Kyle Shanahan is trying to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he thinks he can help. But can we let Isaac Arendo make a mistake first?
Yeah.
Can we let him mess up before we decide that he can't be on the field?
I wonder if he has messed up behind the scenes just too many times, sure, like in practice or something.
Sure, and he didn't get a ton of practices.
Yeah.
And once practice in the regular season starts, there's not a ton of reps available.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. But Debo had 8 carries last night. If Isaac Arendo gets 4 of those,
mm-hmm,
are the 49ers losing the game?
Probably not.
Probably not unless he has fumbling issues or something and a turnover could have swung. Okay, maybe. But if that's the case, if you're drafting a guy in the 4th round and you play him, you felt good enough to trade up for him.
Yeah.
So put him in the football game. That's why you got the points there.
Yeah.
That's why he suited up. Frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't feel comfortable, then bring Matt Breida back. Bring someone back that you do feel comfortable with. I mean,
right.
That's it. Like, if you have a feeling, and that's where I do kind of buy the issue with Christian McCaffrey, where while they may have told Jordan Mason on Friday, hey, there's a good chance you're going to be starting on Monday, they probably didn't say we're 100% guaranteed,
mm-hmm,
because I think that they were still looking at McCaffrey as a player that could be there,
mm-hmm,
or if not, they might have brought someone else in to at least, you know, fill in a practice squad at, mm-hmm, for the last minute and swap him in if you need to. And I just didn't feel like that's what their plan was.
Do they even... Oh, dude, make a play. I don't even think they have a running back on their practice squad.
No.
No, they do. They do, actually. They have Keyshawn Vaughn,
oh,
who was with the team during training camp.
Okay.
In the preseason, but... Again, not a player who was taking a ton of reps. I think he got like 1 carry in the preseason, maybe 2. So it's, again, not a player that Kyle Shanahan trusts. But again, that's where it gets to, like, hey, you got to let guys make a mistake before you decide that you don't trust them anymore.
Yep.
You got to let the players play, dude. But that's, again, that goes back. This goes beyond Isaac Arendo. This is a issue I've had with Kyle Shanahan for several years.
Yeah. And to get back to the original question,
yeah,
like, will this actually change what Christian McCaffrey's role is during the season? It might, Kyle. Like, and I don't think it's going to make him be like, it's not like I'm saying he's not going to be a 1,000-yard rusher or that he's going to be like this incredible, great player.
Mm-hmm.
But he might not be in like the MVP conversation, because there should be a moment where you're looking at McCaffrey and saying, how do we extend him, not just this year, how do we extend him out to 20-something games? How do we extend him out next year, the year after that, and make sure that we're keeping one of the great players in the league as healthy as possible? And you do that by, on occasion, giving someone else an opportunity and trying to avoid just the workload. You know, like, there is definitely a tipping point with every running back. We've seen it time and time again, where the second you hit this many carries, you start become less effective the next season, the season after that, season after that. And so for me, like, preserving Christian McCaffrey, not having Christian McCaffrey on the field for 95% of the snaps, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And so I hope that Mason, he's got another week possibly here to show that he's ready to be the guy that can give a little bit of relief here.
I've seen enough.
Yeah.
He's the guy. Christian McCaffrey averaged 21.2 touches a game last year, 17 carries, 4.2 catches. There's no reason that needs to be above like 15.
On
average.
Okay.
15 a game. I think you can get his rushing attempts down to 13 or 14, and I think his reception numbers are gonna fluctuate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you can get his carries down to 13 or 14 a game. And again, there are going to be some games where, man, he is dominating, or hey, the Niners have a big last drive and he's awesome and he's at 15 carries going into the drive and he's going to carry it seven times on this series and they're going to score a touchdown. That's fine. That's going to happen. That's game script. But this is to a point now. I've seen enough with Jordan Mason, not just last night. And that's the thing. This isn't a last night only thing. This is, you saw the running, 43 carries as a rookie. He was very, very good. And you went, wow, this is an exciting player. Last year, 40 carries, same thing. Every time he touched the ball, it's like, wow, this guy should run. This guy should play more.
Yeah.
This guy can really go. But there were questions about his pass catching. There were questions about his pass blocking. Last night, we saw him catch a contested third down throw for a first down. We saw him pick up a blitz where the play ended up not counting. But blitzer coming off the edge, I think it was a safety or a corner, comes flying off the edge, and Jordan Mason is kind of caught in the wash, and he identifies the blitzer and circles back around the tackle and defensive end and wallops the blitzer right before he gets to Brock Purdy. That's a play that Purdy's helmet's coming off.
Yeah.
Like, type of play. He was going to get walloped from the blind side. And Jordan Mason came in and picked up that blitz. Those are the kind of things now where, like, dude, I've seen enough. Get Jordan Mason on the field. Christian McCaffrey has seven touches in a row. Get him off the field for half a dozen downs. Let Jordan Mason do this. And this is not about Christian McCaffrey is bad now. This is about February. Because in February, in January, you're in a tough playoff game where you maybe have to go to Detroit now, or you've got to go to Philly, or you've got to go to Dallas. You might have to go to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay looked really good this weekend. If you're in a spot where you need to go on the road, like, okay, now, yeah, you know what? We would like a 25-carry game from a fresh, healthy Christian McCaffrey. That's when you want to spend that ticket. Not in week four against the Patriots or whoever the hell they play in week four.
And those are the games where you're just looking at Shanahan like, man, this is a bad team and you're up a bunch. What are you doing putting the ball in that guy's hands 22, 24 times?
Right.
Like, there was a game last year where the game was over and he's at 19 carries and in 19 touches, and he finishes with 25, 26. And it's like, what are you doing? Because we had this discussion last year. So I don't know. Maybe this is, again, I don't think that Jordan Mason is going to take on this huge role, but I do think that he has an opportunity to prove that he's reliable enough and that you can probably give McCaffrey a little bit of a break.
Could not agree more.
And try to, you know, bubble wrap this guy a little bit.
Could not agree more. He's a dog, bro.
Yep.
Here's the thing. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is the Insiders on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on this Tuesday. A fascinating aspect of where the 49ers are now is that I was doing post-game in San Francisco at 95.7 The Game yesterday. And Mark Grandy and Sterling Bennett are the host and co-host on that show. And when we were talking about the game, we got through so many things before we even got to Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a matter of, man, the Niners dragged Brock Purdy along last night. They won in spite of Brock Purdy. Like, no, it wasn't. They just didn't need him to be awesome last night, but he was really freaking good, dude.
Yes.
And that's just the fact that it didn't jump out to me is a testament to where Brock Purdy is as a player. I just expect this now. Oh, dot to Brandon Ayuk in the corner that got dropped, but that throw, you know what? Best throw of the night. I kind of expect that. Another one to Brandon Ayuk, the deep out where there's pressure in his face late in the game. I think it was on their second to last scoring drive. They had a third down. He steps up, hit Brandon Ayuk on the deep out for 14 yards with pressure in his face. Like, that's a dime.
Mm-hmm.
There was another play where he was going to get sacked, but then kind of snaked up through the pocket and found Debo and just like shoveled the ball to him. And Debo catches it, makes the defender miss, and goes for 10. Like, that's taking a negative play and turning it into a positive one. And that is just individually on Brock Purdy. That's just what he is now. And it is so refreshing coming out of a 49er game and not having the freaking quarterback being the center of attention. Brock Purdy wasn't the greatest last night, but in a week where we saw so much bad quarterback play around the NFL.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible.
Having a quarterback who is in a game where you went, yeah, it wasn't his best, and he's still like above baseline competent. That's such a massive W.
I totally agree. And like, if you look at the two balls that Ayuk dropped, he would have had a very good game. He would have been more like 260, 270. Mm-hmm. It would have been a very, very high level game where you're like, oh, okay, he threw that. He would have hit the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the Ayuk drop on that play, I think it's interesting. It's one of those things where, like, if you ever play softball or you play baseball, mm-hmm. if you haven't played the outfield in a long time, you forget on like when there's a fly ball and you've got to run in on it, mm-hmm. that the field starts to bounce.
Yeah.
And it's something that like three or four fly balls in, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple, you got to learn how to run smooth and mm-hmm. learn how to keep your sort of your focus. That's what it felt like. Ayuk made ran a route and just kind of got a little bouncy,
mm-hmm.
and lost his focus for a second.
Shout out ATs.
I still think that.
Sorry, go ahead.
I still think that like what we saw from Brock Purdy, it wasn't game manager. It was just really, really good football. There was even, he went to do a bootleg and there was a defensive mm-hmm. lineman that was running right at mm-hmm. him, just took one little sidestep. And the guy was lost and he got rid of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these moments where he just shows you that, like, he's got it. Like, he's just cool, calm, collective. Yep. Like, it's his show.
I don't want this to come across like, man, he is Patrick Mahomes. He's not. And that's fine. No, nobody really is.
No.
But the reason that so many people talk up Brock Purdy and like Brock Purdy and believe that he's a good player is because he is so good at avoiding negative plays. And I think that's such an underrated skill because it was something Jimmy Garoppolo was not good at. Jimmy Garoppolo was very, very bad at avoiding negative plays. In fact, he was very, very bad because he created negative plays.
Yes.
And there didn't need to be one. And so now to have Brock Purdy, to have a quarterback who takes, and there are several quarterbacks in the league who do this. This is not unique to him. But having a quarterback who turns a play that is going to be a sack, let's say you're in second and six and you're going to throw it. And instead of taking a sack where you're now third and long, that quarterback turns the play into a first down or turns it into a short gain. So now you're at third and three and you're in that third and short situation.
Mm-hmm.
That is so huge because the difference between third and three and third and 12 is just massive. And so having and not to mention the plays where that negative play turns into a first down or a touchdown, which we've seen Brock Purdy do time and time again. Mm-hmm. I just think that this is now a thing where he has just established himself as, nope, this is just a really damn good quarterback. And is he going to misfire to Kyle Juszczyk in the flat a little bit high? Yep, but what quarterback doesn't? Is he going to make a dangerous throw into double coverage to Eric Saubert? Yeah, that's going to happen sometimes. But go find me a quarterback performance this weekend where the quarterback was pristine and didn't make a single throw where you went, ugh.
It didn't happen.
That exact sound, by the way. Ugh.
Yeah. It was ugly.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Brock's good, dude. And the fact that he was as good as he was last night and we didn't talk about him until 55 minutes into our show is a testament to me where he has landed as a signal caller.
Well, that and, I mean, you also have to remember that his primary receiver missed all of camp and showed up like a couple of days ago and dropped two balls.
Dime.
You got to remember that his star running back and pass catching back out of the backfield didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are all these things. So you keep saying, oh, well, he has all these weapons. It's like, mm-hmm. okay. Yeah, he made the most of his weapons. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a running back that was spectacular and that created some space, but he also had the nice play to Juszczyk. He had a nice deep downfield pass to Kittle. He had a really nice couple of passes to Ayuk, even though he wasn't great. And then Juwan Jennings, every time you need a third down, like, go to the big fella. And, yeah.
5 of 5 for 64 yards. His only catch that didn't go for a first down was a 2nd and 9 play where his catch went for, or excuse me, a 3rd and 9 play where his catch went for 8 yards and set up a 4th and 1.
Oh, yeah.
He was their leading receiver last night.
Yeah.
You had Deebo Samuel, 5 for 54. Then you had George Kittle, 4 for 40. And then Kyle Juszczyk. And that Kyle Juszczyk, you mentioned getting him involved as a receiver. That play where he kind of wheels out and gets up the sideline. I swear to God, I watched Jimmy Garoppolo miss that throw 10 times.
Oh, so many times.
And
so Purdy many times.
Drops it in, 34 yeah. yard gain, sets yeah. up a touchdown.
Yep.
Is it just the little things that he does differently, and it's one of the many reasons that he gives them a chance to win week in and week out. If they have a game where they're not rushing for 180 yards, then yeah, Purdy's going to need to be a little bit better for sure. He was perfect by no means, but he was just good. He was just solid, man.
Yeah, solid in a week where so many weren't.
Yeah, it's week
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
getting your receivers back. Happy with what I saw from Brock Purdy last night. Happy with what I saw from the 49ers last night. We have another hour to go. We got mad props to revisit. We've got keys to the game and some Kings news in early September, mid-September, mid-ish September, or late early September, early mid-September.
Early, late early September.
Early to mid-September Kings news. We'll have that for you next, as well as plenty more NFL talk here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and we are sponsored by Jiffy Lube, hanging out with you until noon. Then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and Casey. Still just me and James. No Joe yet.
No Joe yet.
Joe Brazil. Hmm. I just felt the show felt better with Joe on it. I'm just saying.
It would have been really nice if, like, we had, like, it was chaos. Like, yesterday was total chaos. Mm-hmm. I thought Joe did a really good job managing a chaotic situation.
He absolutely did.
Yeah.
Because stuff like that in radio, where, so, without getting into the weeds of it, I was in San Francisco yesterday. They set me up in San Francisco, the Odyssey Studios there, to be able to do a show that fed back through our studio here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I was able to do radio from San Francisco. But it's like complicated. It's not just push a button and go. There's all sorts of stuff. And that is the type of day where it's hectic and he had this. He had the live show that he had to board up. And that is the kind of day that makes people, because I've seen it before in radio, where they're just like, this ain't for me.
Oh, yeah.
This is, I don't want to deal with this. I thought it was just going to be turn the mics on and talk. I don't want to do all this. So not only did Joe do a great job yesterday, from everything I could glean, mm-hmm. you were here,
yep.
so I'm going to believe you, but everything I could glean from where I sat, Joe did a great job, show went smoothly, and then I get a text from Joe later that's like, that was awesome. And it's like, dude, he loves it.
All right.
He's here for it, and we're here for Joe, so hopefully someday, very soon, Joe is the third person on this show, so we can say, hey, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. And then we can say this. I've always wanted to say this. I've never gotten to say this on a radio show before. And say Joe Brazil behind the glass.
Oh, there it is.
Behind the glass, Joe.
That would be nice.
It'd be really nice.
That would be very nice. Yeah, it just takes the stress off of you and allows us to like kind of free flow a little bit better.
Do you understand how much less stressed I would be in the mornings.
Oh, yeah.
If I didn't have to do all this, too.
Yeah.
If I could just throw it a break and somebody else is pushing the buttons. Huh. That'd be so nice.
Even yesterday, I forgot that you couldn't hear all of them, all of the intros and stuff. And then I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, I got to point at you.
Yeah. Just like waiting on you. Intro's done. Just nobody saying anything.
Went moments.
Great. Had such a good time. And salute to everybody. Seth, Jonathan, for getting that set up. And then Tim Jordan and Matt Nahigan back there at 95.7 The Game helping me out as well. Really appreciate their assistance. Let's put a pin in the NFL briefly.
Yep.
We've got other stuff to get to. I want to revisit our keys to the game from last night. Coming up at 11:30, we will revisit mad props from the weekend. We'll find out who won week one between James and myself. That'll be the other great thing about having Joe on the show, is we can add a third person to mad props.
Oh.
Yeah.
That, and he can keep score.
Yeah, he can keep scoring. Dude, we're going to just make him do everything.
That's right. He can cut the video, put it up on the internet.
It's going to be awesome. So we have plenty more to get to from the 49ers-Jets game last night. But there was some Sacramento Kings news, some coaching news on that front. James Hamm of the Kings Beat, kingsbeat.com, and the Kings Beat podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your pods. Take it away.
Yeah, the Sacramento Kings announced their promotions and staff updates yesterday. Jay Triano has been promoted to the associate head coach. Of course, he's replacing Jordy Fernandez.
That was expected, right?
I don't know if it was expected. I didn't know if they were going to have an associate head coach, but I think that not every team has an associate head coach.
Sure.
And it felt like Jordy Fernandez, because he was leaving a really good situation with the Denver Nuggets to come to Sacramento, that maybe you were giving him a larger title than just assistant coach.
Sure.
So that's a big deal. It just, you know, Jay Triano, I think, has been, he's a breath of fresh air. He's super funny and super cool. Like, I really like Jay. He's been around the game forever. He's got a good feel. He's one who's orchestrated that incredible offense. So he gets a bump to associate head coach, which doesn't really mean anything for him on the bench. They also, the press release doesn't mention Doug Christie or Luke Laux, which I think upsets some people for some reason. Because they're not mentioned.
I'm furious.
It just means that there's nothing to report on them, that they are just doing basically the same thing that they were doing last year. Except for Luke has been elevated to the front of the bench. But that's not something you typically would press release that someone has become.
He's going
to
sit in a different chair this year.
He gets to sit in the front row, not in the second row at an NBA game. On top of that, Jawad Williams, who, from what I know, the Kings really like, he's been elevated to an assistant coach / director of player development.
Summer league coach, right?
Yeah, for one of the teams. Doug had one team.
Cal Classic coach.
Yeah, and Jawad had the other team during the Cal Classic. Jawad is basically, it sounds like he's going to take over for what Dutch Gately was doing, because he's the director of player development. Charles Allen has been promoted to player development coach. Dip Mistry is now, Dip is awesome. He is now the head video coordinator and player development coach. We have a couple other guys. Sam Longwood has been named an assistant video coordinator. Shannon Goldman has been promoted to a video assistant. And then they announce Ricardo Foyce and Jim Morin have joined the staff as assistant coaches. So,
welcome Ricardo and Jim.
Yeah, Ricardo and Jim, they're the big names of this whole thing. Realistically, Jay Triano getting his bump is cool, but Ricardo Foyce, which we had a couple of, I was in Cabo for one of those, and I think Jim Morin, I was in Cabo again for another one of those. But yeah.
The Kings just wait until James Hamm's in Cabo, and then they're like, wait, sign a coach.
That's right. Exactly. So at least we have the coaching updates are done, and that's a good thing for the Kings. Everything's kind of in place.
Sweet. Yeah. Very good. What's the next, before we get back to football, what's the next Kings thing we can kind of expect now? Just camp?
Yeah, training camp.
Oh,
yeah. Right. I think they did add a player. I believe they added a player last week. Chris Haynes reported that they may have brought in a point guard.
Yes, good.
I can't remember, to be honest.
As long as they're working out more guards, we know they're heading the right direction.
Free agent guard Terry Taylor has reached an agreement on a camp deal with the Sacramento Kings, according to Chris Haynes. So that's another player. So I think they're up to 19, that you can carry up to 21 in camp, all the way up until the end of camp, including your two-way players. So they're at 18 or 19
going out
players.
The roster.
19, 20 players, something like that. Yeah, so this is a camp invite, what they call an Exhibit 10 contract.
Cool. Right on.
That's all.
Very good. That's your Sacramento Kings update. If there's any more news, we'll have it for you, but we're not expecting much until training camp starts. And then, of course, we'll be all over it right here on ESPN 1320 with the insiders, me and James, and then D'Lo and Casey, of course, will be on it as well. So keep it locked in here to ESPN 1320, whether you're listening on the radio, the free Odyssey app, or maybe you're listening, watching us on YouTube and Twitch, youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Thank you, everybody who is watching there, whether you're participating in the chatty house or not. Thank you to all of you, except for Manny. All right. Niners yesterday, we had some keys to victory.
Mm-hmm.
I want to run back through the keys. This is always a good exercise. Because for me, going back through keys to the game gives us a good gauge of like what did we expect and then what did happen and how can we adjust expectations moving forward from there.
I think it also like lets people know whether we are complete buffoons who have no idea what we're talking about on the radio or whether we actually have some sort of feel for what we're watching.
Don't get it twisted. I'm a buffoon who doesn't know what he's talking about on the radio, but a blind squirrel and all that.
That's right.
All right. So key number one for you, James, what was it and how'd you feel about it after the game?
Key was come out healthy, a little scary with CMC, Williams, and Ayuk missing so much time. Overall, like the fact that Christian McCaffrey didn't play, which we didn't know about, but I think Ayuk and Trent making it through the game is great. The fact that Trent Williams had to go get an IV in the middle of the game is like very Trent Williams-esque. It's like, hey, look at that. He's going to get an IV and coming back
That's
out.
That is a house-sized human who did not get a training camp, who had played 70 snaps.
Yeah.
He needed an IV.
Yeah, yes.
That makes sense.
So I think that that was good, but I also think that there wasn't a lot of other injuries coming out of week one, and that's typically a really, really good sign. What you don't want to have happen in week one is lose two or three players long term, and then you're scrambling.
My first key was get outside your tendencies. We saw it a little bit in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We saw them start to air it out a little more. We see them do this all the time, use the run to set up the pass. You get a defense on their heels by run, and then Kyle Juszczyk's open, and then George Kittle's open, and that's just kind of how this offense works. I was actually kind of surprised that they came out and ran it the way they did. And I don't know if that was in the game plan or if the game script changed as they went.
Well, I think it changed.
And Shanahan went, hey, we're moving these guys around. We're just gonna keep leaning on this. But still, Brock Purdy, 29 pass attempts in a game where they won 32-19. I don't think they got outside of their tendencies as much as I thought they would. I thought we would see more first and second down throws from Purdy, but it was a lot of the run game, and why not? It was working.
Yeah, I think there's that, and adding to that, I think the like when you're talking about get outside of your tendencies, some of that means that you can't just kick a field goal every time, that you need to go forward on fourth and one here and there. You need to make the right, like we talked a little bit about, like the right blackjack play, right? Mm-hmm. And I still think that they played very safe. And like, why not? You're in a situation where you just kept scoring, so playing it safe was okay. I would have liked to have seen them push the envelope, because there were opportunities to get better as a team and to have real life game action where you could have got better at specific things, or you could have tried new things, and they didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so that's okay, but, you know.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that. I have a small gripe that I would like to get to later in the show, but I don't want to nitpick just yet. What was your second key?
My second key is let Purdy sling it.
Hmm.
And, like, look, I loved it. I thought that if he didn't have the couple of drops, he would have had a perfectly, like, spectacular game, where you're like, okay, you know, add another 30, 40 yards to his overall stats, and his stats should jump off the page.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was good. I thought that you were able to rely so heavily on the run, so you didn't need him to be a superstar, but that's okay. Like, he was, the fact that you were able to sustain eight consecutive drives and score is a lot on the quarterback play.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm right there with you. Even if you just add in, let's just take it face value, because there's it's a butterfly effect, right? It's really hard to just say, well, if this play had happened, then here's how it all would have gone, because you never know. But let's just take it face value. Let's say Ayuk catches that touchdown. This is what the stat line now looks like, because it ended at 19 of 29, 231, no touchdowns, no picks. That looks pretty bland, right? But let's tack on a 25-yard touchdown where he's now 20 of 29 for 256 and a touchdown.
Looks a lot better.
It looks a lot better. So I think you could say that for a lot of quarterbacks. Drops happen all the time. Purdy was good. Forget the stat line for a second. Go watch the game. Save for one drive where he out of nowhere lost his mind for three plays.
Yeah.
I thought he was really, really good for the entire night. And they let him put it in the air 29 times in a game where they also ran it 38 times.
That's wild.
Yeah. Second key for me was secondary step up, and I think they did. Have you seen Aaron Rodgers' passing chart yet?
No.
Okay, I'm going to pull this up on the stream so everybody can see it, and then I will describe it for those of you listening on the radio. Because Josh Norris from Underdog Fantasy posted the next gen stats passing chart for Aaron Rodgers. And this is, as I share it here on the screen, this is what it looks like. You'll notice there are two throws to the right, to Aaron Rodgers' right, to the defense's left. One of them is behind the line of scrimmage for what would have been a screen pass. The other one is 5 yards down the field and right on the hash.
Mm.
Everything else is to the quarterback's left, to the defense's right. And that is because Charvarius Ward hangs out on this left side. This is where Charvarius Ward hangs out.
Yeah, that's wild. The one deep ball, the touchdown,
yep,
that goes to the right, that's on the broken play. That's where somebody jumped off sides. And
then everybody stopped playing.
Stupid.
Inexcusable.
Yeah.
Just really bad. More nitpicks. But... yeah, there was a touchdown. That's not on that. That wasn't on Ward. There was no action happening on this side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's related to Aaron Rodgers' Achilles. I think it's related to Charvarius Ward being a really, really good player and Rodgers not wanting to test him.
Yeah,
They lined up Garrett Wilson in the slot against Diamador Lenore a lot, and then they went to Alan Lazard quite a bit. But whoever Charvarius Ward was covering did not have a fun night. And that's largely the 49ers secondary stepping up, and they had to because the pass rush wasn't very good, which is your third key, I believe.
Yeah, and I think so. My third key was pressure Aaron Rodgers nonstop. I didn't think they were good at all, and they had one sack, they had four quarterback hits, and a lot of the quarterback hits or the pressure that they got came at the end of the game when Tyrod Taylor was in the game. Like one of those hits where Bosa reached out and grabbed him but didn't get the sack.
Mm-hmm.
I going back to Aaron Rodgers' passing chart, I think that there's something that maybe will explain some of the reason why the Niners did what they did. They kept putting Bosa on the left side, and I didn't think it was effective at all. But you can see where they didn't pass to that side at all. And I think that's because they didn't want to put Rodgers anywhere near Bosa.
Mm.
So we looked at the snap count, right? And wasn't it like something like 29 on the of passing downs? Was it like 29-5 or something?
Yeah. According to Pro Football Focus, let me get these numbers back up. I had closed them, but luckily we can get them quickly. Nick Bosa on pass rushes was on the right side of the defense.
Yep.
Offense's left side.
Yep.
So Nick Bosa was lined up over the left tackle 6 times. 24 times he was lined up over the right tackle.
Okay. And just so people know, the one sack that the Niners had, Bosa was on the right side. He put all kinds of pressure, and then Floyd got the sack.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I don't know why they didn't do more of that, but it almost felt like they're trying to take away one side of the field.
Yeah, yeah, definitely might have been that. Nick Bosa's typically bounces around a little bit. They'll matchup hunt with him for sure. They'll matchup hunt with all their defensive linemen.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason Chris Kocurek, their defensive line coach, is so good. I would be interested to know the impetus behind that, because maybe that was it, or maybe they thought Leonard Floyd was better on one side than the other. I'm not totally sure. But that was interesting last night, yeah, for sure. They got to do something, man. Maybe Gross Matos coming back helps, but that's not going to solve the entire problem. Their pass rush was an issue last night.
Oh, no, totally an issue. Yeah.
So there are a couple plays I thought Rodgers left on the field. I thought he looked a little bit washed last night, but he's also 40 and coming back from an Achilles injury, so I'm not going to write him off just yet. But there were just probably four plays that prime Rodgers, you just got used to him making.
Mm-hmm.
And that he just didn't quite have in his bag. And again, maybe that's just rust and he'll get there. But overall, moral of the story, Niners pass rush didn't do enough.
No. And I would say with Rodgers, he also hasn't played with that receiving group, the running back group at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's got a learning curve here to get as he's coming back to the field. He didn't play in the preseason, all that mm-hmm. stuff. So yeah, I want to see what he looks like in week 5, because by week 5, I think we'll know whether he's just completely washed or he just needed to shake off some rust and he could be back to who he was.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. Third key, as is going to be every single game for us.
Mm-hmm.
Got to win the turnover battle. And hey, 2-0, Niners win the turnover battle, Niners win the game. And they won all three facets, I thought.
They did. They won all three facets of the game, Kyle.
Hey, I will say, I little mea culpa here. I gave Jake Moody a lot of grief last year.
Oh, yeah. We both did.
Because he was the 99th overall pick, and all we heard about was how he's unflappable and he's so clutch, and they put him through all these situations, and oh, man, you just can't shake this kid. And then he goes for his first game-winning field goal in Cleveland and misses it. Like, tough. Really tough. And then the next week, indoors in Minnesota, Niners trying to stick around in a game, he misses a field. Like, just come on, dude. But he got much better. He was really good in the Super Bowl, and then 6 for 6 last night.
Yeah, he was money.
He was really good, and having a reliable kicker is a pretty significant deal.
So my
good for him.
I'm
still gonna give him grief for using the 99th pick on a kicker. That's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. My son has decided to do the anti-Faraz Siddiqui draft. He has an entire football league. Fantasy football league based around they choose a kick returner, individual defensive players, and kickers. That's all they have. That's the
hell
whole league.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious because they've pumped up the kicking score.
Yeah, of course.
So like the guy who scored, who was it, the Dallas kicker, who's that dude?
Dog.
What in the world?
We didn't talk
is,
about this yesterday.
What is that guy? A robot.
I was so mad, like irrationally mad. Not that I don't know what the right. I'm gonna say Matt when they lined up for the 71 yard field goal, because they lined up for the 66 yarder.
Yes,
he makes it, but delay a game, so they back it up to 71. And it looks like they're gonna try it, and I was like, yes,
that would have been so sick.
Do it, and then the cowards punt. See, oh, I was so. I get why. Like, of course you're gonna punt.
Well, of course.
You're not gonna try that. Yeah, but yeah. The fact that they started to line up, and the fact that we've seen Brandon Aubrey comfortably hit a 66 yarder before, and then he had just hit another one.
Dude, he is
like, give it a
crazy.
Rip. Give it a try.
He's such a robot too. You're like, I watched, like, they had a short field goal early, and the defense was sort of like close.
Mm-hmm.
And he just like walked through and drilled it. Like it wasn't just that he's a big leg. You could see he understood what was happening like in the moment and mm-hmm. was like, oh no, I got to get rid of this mm-hmm. ball. And again, just perfect right down the middle and just drilled. Yeah. Where this is like the age of the kicker, or mm-hmm. week 1 was the week of the kicker. What do we have? Like
bad QBs, good kickers.
Three kickers kick 5 or more.
That's insane. That's so many,
including a bunch of 50s.
But I think that's a testament too. And we talked about the 49ers scored on 8 consecutive possessions. That's awesome. You'd like to see those become touchdowns. That is where I think the week 1 of the NFL season comes in. Like, this is offense is still trying to iron out the kinks, particularly if your first team offense didn't play a lot, particularly if you have a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think we're going to see differently kind of moving forward, is I think you're going to see a lot of these field goals become touchdowns.
Yeah, I think so too.
As offenses get up to speed.
I mean, either way, 8 consecutive drives with a score is crazy.
Really good. It's really, really good. I have a nitpick about one of those field goals that we'll get to in the next segment after Mad Props. I'm trying really hard to not be nitpick guy today.
Okay.
But yesterday we talked about the vibes, right? And I said, man, I don't know about the vibe going into this game. And you said, hey, the vibe going in is way less important than the vibe coming out of the game.
That's right.
Did last night erase all the preseason stuff, all the stuff that we saw the 49ers deal with, all the contract stuff, the injury stuff, and all this? I know Christian McCaffrey's still hurt, but are the vibes back? Is the pall that was cast upon the 49ers during the preseason now gone?
I think it is. And there's also something that happened in the game, which I actually really liked.
Mm-hmm.
When Ayuk dropped the touchdown, right? You heard the murmur in the crowd.
Yeah.
You heard, like, there weren't, like, outright, like, super loud boos, but there was, like, a, come on, bro. And then you look on social media, and it was like, dude, 120, where are you? It was, like, pile on, pile on, pile on. And
good!
I thought, like, as far as, like, a vibes night, like, the vibes are so good, but no, there's still accountability for what you did. And you want to be the smug guy that makes a joke. Yeah, it was probably a little too hard on the team. Like all that stuff, that's fine. But you're going to have to own up to it when you make mistakes in week one that in another week could cost you the week.
Yes.
It could cost you home field advantage. It could cost you all kinds of things.
Dropping a pass is going to happen.
Yes.
That is just every receiver at some point in their career is going to drop a pass. It would have been... It would have been a nice little catch, but that's a catch you expect Brandon Ayuk to make.
Yep.
You cannot be a pain in the ass about getting your bag and getting your money and then dropping a dime.
Yeah.
You cannot. That was a bar. You cannot. You can't do that.
Nope.
Get your money for sure. I want you to get paid. I want every player to make the maximum amount of money they can make in their careers. That is what I want. But you just mentioned... He said in his press conference, this is Brandon Ayuk admitted. This is not Adam Schefter saying it. This is not Ian Rappaport. This is not Matt Maiocco or Matt Barrows or James Hammer, Kyle Madsen saying this. This is Brandon Ayuk who went to the podium and said this. Said, yeah, I probably made him a little more difficult than I needed to.
Yeah.
If you're going to admit that, okay. But when your quarterback throws a dot into the back corner of the end zone, you better come down with it, man.
That's right.
Or you're going to get the murmurs. If Brandon Ayuk could sign his contract in June and he drops that pass, you're going to have some people that are like, wow, what did he pay that guy for? But like, okay, go to heck. But if you're going to, did you hear Peyton Manning?
Yeah.
Peyton Manning was apoplectic. I thought I had another minute. We can't get to Peyton Manning here. We'll hear what Peyton Manning had to say about Brandon Ayuk's drop. Coming up next, we'll have Mad Props coming up next, and I want to nitpick.
That's right.
I've got a couple of just minor little things from last night. That I wanted to pick on, and we'll have the handoff with one of D'Lo or Casey. I'm not really sure who. That's coming up next in about 15 minutes here on The Insiders. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Voice guys, say all that stuff again.
Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James there, Kyle here. Jiffy Lube everywhere. They sponsor the show. They're also everywhere around Sacramento. Visit JiffyLube.com today to find the location nearest to you. Here's Peyton Manning. We were talking about Brandon Ayuk at the end of the last segment. Here's Peyton Manning on the Manning cast as that play is happening and immediately after that play. Here it is.
Man to man, Jennings.
Oh, he's got a throw.
Ayuk, he's a little rusty, Pate. You know, he's missed all training camp.
Hey, get signed, get in training camp. There's a reason for training camp. You need it. We need the reps.
Oh.
Get those contracts done earlier so we can get in training camp. We don't drop balls on opening night.
Right, it's probably one thing catching passes, running routes. All of a sudden you're laying out for a pass, full speed, diving. That's why those happen in camp. You make those, you practice those. That's just a little rusty right there.
You're still catching balls at a high school field from some quarterback that's 45 years old my age. You're not catching balls from your quarterback. Get signed, get in camp, and we don't drop the ball.
Woo! That's it. That's the sentiment, I think, last night. I said this at the break. If he signed his contract in June, we're not talking about that play today.
It's just the optics of,
all right, you're a pain in the rear end to get your bag. Okay, that's fine. but then you got to go make that play, dog.
No, I agree 100%, man. Like, it's not an easy play. It's not, but you were open. You had the ball was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, what a toss. Really good throw. What a toss.
Best throw of the night for Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Let's nitpick, and then we can dive into mad props. Nitpick number one. Well, we talked about it a little bit. The Debo between the tackle stuff. 8 carries, 23 yards. He did have the touchdown. Nearly fumbled on the touchdown.
Mm.
Very reminiscent of his fumble in week one in 2021 against the Bears in Chicago. Again, I'm not going to complain about Debo. He's awesome. But, like, dude, you got to secure the football. If you're going to run as physical as he does, and you're going to lower your shoulder, you got to secure the football.
I totally agree. And, like, look, even the one-yard touchdown run, I'm okay with that. What I don't want to see is 5 or 6 or 7
first and 10 at your own 30.
Between the tackles.
Yes.
No, yeah. Please don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, he's too important to what you're doing. He's too important to the program and the longevity of this season. And he did too much work in the offseason to be in phenomenal shape to go out there and get a concussion in week one because you run him through the tackles. And maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. But I just think they're lucky to escape without. That's just too much.
I kind of wonder if that was a product of the uncertainty with McCaffrey. And maybe they didn't know until Friday night. They're like, oh, hey, he's not going to play. Mm. All right, well, we have a walkthrough on Saturday. We've got to kind of scramble to put together a run game here. We trust Debo here. We're just going to give him half a dozen carries.
Yep.
And he winds up with 8. The big one for me, and again, this is picking nits. The Niners played really well last night.
Yep.
If you're getting a week one performance where you're scoring 32 points and you feel like you left points on the field, you feel pretty good about it. I want to talk about the fourth quarter field goal from Kyle Shanahan on 4th and 1. So the about 10 minutes left in the game. 49ers up 26-13. 13-point lead. They're on the Jets 5. They have a 4th and 1. It's actually the Juwan Jennings catch. It didn't go for a first down. Set this one up.
Yep.
The Niners opt to kick a field goal. And that puts them up 16 with about 10 minutes to go. So now the Jets need 2 touchdowns and 2 extra points to tie the game.
Two-point conversions.
Two-point conversions. My mindset there, and this is not related just to last night. This is a Kyle Shanahan aggressiveness thing that I've had an issue with for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people do. 26-13. You go for the touchdown there. So your odds, you're looking to pick up a 4th and 1 on a night where you averaged, 4.5 yards a carry, 4.7 yards per carry?
Something like that.
4.7 per carry. You have George Kittle, you have Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, you have Kyle Juszczyk, you have Jordan Mason, who has been a hoss.
Running like a freight train.
You need a yard.
Mm-hmm.
You can go up 20. You can put this game away. 20 points at 10 minutes left, that's night-night, because now they need 3 touchdowns. Or you take a field goal and, okay, now they need 2 touchdowns. Basically, the odds are long for the Jets anyways, just based on how they were moving the ball last night. But if you don't get 4th and 1, they're still backed up at their 5. They still need 2 touchdowns. Playing for overtime, playing for the possibility of overtime, like, now it's a coin flip, right?
Yeah.
It's a long shot that they're going to score 2 touchdowns regardless, but, okay, you put them in a position where now you're going to overtime. Overtime's about 50-50. Your chances of picking up that 4th and 1 or scoring a touchdown are more than 50-50. So to me, that is a spot where, again, I understand the logic. I'm sure there are people screaming right now at their computers or their radios or whatever going, make it 2 scores with 2 two-point conversions. The Jets aren't getting that. You're basically, but like the it's, I'd so much rather go up 3 scores than be up 2 scores a little bit differently. I don't want to play for overtime, dog. I want to end this game. I would like this game, and that's exactly what would have happened if they went for a touchdown there.
Okay, so I'm with you 100% because I think that there are real-life game situations here that you probably need to work on, right? You can't replicate that situation in practice. You can try, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
So go get the 1 yard and show that you can do it. Like, and look at the time you're going to burn by getting that first down, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing. At the same time, you're kind of looking at a team that's just rolling. Your kicker hasn't missed. He's been clean all night long.
Mm-hmm.
You know that this is going to basically put the game away.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but it's too many times where you're too conservative in a moment where, like, there is an opportunity to just ice the game.
Mm-hmm.
And It's something that I think you and I both, like, if there is a fault to Kyle Shanahan, it is this type of thing right here.
Yeah.
Where it's like, look, you look at your card. You have a card for all of this. You should know exactly what the odds are, what it is that you're looking at, and you should make a decision based on that. What you don't do is go, hey, the dealer has an 8, but I think they only have a 7 hiding underneath, and I've got a 6, so I'm going to sit. No, you sit, you lose.
Right, and that's and again, they kick the field goal, they go on to win. This is a larger Kyle Shanahan conversation.
Yeah.
Where they have this offense that cannot be stopped last night, and you have a chance to go for the juggler. Game is over if they score a touchdown.
Yeah.
Go for that. I get kicking the field goal, cool. Now they need 2, and now if they do score 2 touchdowns, they get the, well, now we even get overtime. Screw overtime, dude. I don't give a damn about overtime. Go win it right now in regulation. Go take that game. It's too many times we've watched Kyle Shanahan on 4th and 2. Okay, we're going to settle for a long field goal here. Oh, 4th and 1 at the 50. Yeah, we're going to punt here. It's the conservative stuff when you have this offense. Go watch the Chiefs. Go watch watch a full Chiefs game. Do not go watch the Chiefs in Super Bowls.
Or the Bills.
Against the 49ers.
Or the Bills.
Or like, the Bills. Or the Dolphins.
Yeah.
When the Chiefs come out on 4th and 2 at their own 49, you don't feel good about it as an opposing fan. It's like, ah, damn. You want them to punt. But they don't. And that's what I would like the 49ers to become. They have the personnel to do that. They have a quarterback who you can trust to make the right decision in that spot. They have the offensive personnel to go get you a yard, to go get you 2 yards, to go get you a touchdown. I would just like them to operate as though they are that and not that they're the freaking 74 Steelers.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's just you're too conservative all the time.
Yes, like, this is an ongoing trend.
You have to actually show that you can mix it up and be someone different in a moment. And you have to, like, it's... try something. Like, it's, you got the game in hand. Just go out and put it away and make the conversation over, but also go out and get the reps. Get the reps doing something. And you're right. Like, you got Juwan Jennings, who all he does is catch first downs. You've got Kittle. You've got Juszczyk, you could somehow find in that. You got a running back who's just rolling. He's got like 140 something yards at that point. Like, you have too many options there where. You know, again, you're not risking a whole lot. But, hey, they won the game. And at the end of the day, I think that that's what matters. And, you know, so I get it.
Yeah, they won. And that's why this is a nitpick.
Yeah.
I understand the idea behind going for the field goal there. You take the points. You go up 16. I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a mindset that I would like the 49ers to have differently.
Yeah.
That's all. All right. You want to do mad props?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Mad props before we get to the handoff. With one of D'Lo or Casey. Not sure which one. I should find that out before the show. Yeah. Which one of you guys is coming in today? That way I can properly promote it. But here we go, Matt.
It's time for Mad Props. 2 games, 2 props. Which number will be higher? That's for Kyle and James to decide.
That is.
Here's Mad Props.
All right, so typically we do a football game with a basketball game, but because there's no basketball just yet for about another month or so, we're doing 2 football games. So we did Niner game, Raider game. And we tried to cross-match the stats so it's not just quarterback versus quarterback, running back versus running back, et cetera, et cetera. So the first one was Brock Purdy pass attempts or Raiders points scored. We both had Brock Purdy pass attempts. This is Raiders points scored against the Chargers. We both had Brock Purdy pass attempts. That's a big winner. 29 pass attempts for Brock Purdy. Just 10 points for the Las Vegas Raiders in their loss to the Chargers. Number 2. Christian McCaffrey touches or Gardner Minshew completions. You had McCaffrey touches. I had Minshew completions. McCaffrey obviously did not play. So we are going to strike that one. But Gardner Minshew, 25 completions. If we went to Jordan Mason, it would have been 29 and you would have won. But that's not how the game works.
That's so, right.
It's a wash. Jake Moody made field goals or Max Crosby sacks. We both said Jake Moody field goals.
We were right, Kyle.
Max Crosby could have had 5 sacks, which he is absolutely capable of. And it would not have been enough. Jake Moody, 6 field goals. The 4th 49er kicker in history to make 6 field goals in a game. He joins Robbie Gould, who did it in 2017. Jeff Wilkins, I believe is his name, in 1996.
Yep.
and Ray Wershing in 1983. The next one down, Brandon Ayuk snaps or Vegas LA total points. We had 32 total points. I forgot to go check Brandon Ayuk's snap count, so I'm going to vamp while I do that right now. Thank you to NFL Jesus. Here we go. Brandon Ayuk played 43 snaps. Brandon Ayuk snaps is the winner there, 43-32. I won that one. I had Ayuk.
Yeah, you
snaps.
Got that one.
Yeah, hell yeah. And then the last one, two more. Niners Packers total points. This is the problem with Aaron Rodgers. I wrote Packers so many times. Niners Jets total points or Brock Bowers receiving yards. We had 51 total points for the 49ers and the Jets, 58 receiving yards for Raiders star rookie Brock Bowers. You and I both had Bowers in that one. Shout out to us. Last one. We had Nick Bosa pressures or Devontae Adams catches. We both went with Devontae Adams, and we have, ladies and gentlemen, a tie.
No. You had six pressures?
Adams only had five catches.
Five.
He had six targets. Unless I have this wrong via Pro Football Focus, I believe Nick Bosa had five pressures.
Wow.
Let me go back and double check. Now you're making me rethink my pass rush. Nick Bosa, total pressures, five pressures. That is bang on the number. Shout out to me because we are just here guessing. So I win this week by virtue of the Christian McCaffrey DNP. Mm. And the Brandon Ayuk snaps.
Yep.
Mm.
What are we? You're what 4-1, and I was 4-1. You were 5-0.
Yes.
All right. We have to carry these stats into next week.
Well, you were technically because we had one that didn't count.
Yeah. So we just removed that one.
So we just whack that one. Pause. And then we had the one that tied, which also doesn't count. It's a push.
Okay, so
that one gets wiped.
So 4-1-1 or 3-1-1?
2-3-4. I was 4-0 is how I'm going to count that.
Yep.
And
I was 3-1.
You were 3-1.
Mm. Not bad.
I can't wait until Joe can keep track of this instead of me.
That's right.
So you were 3-1. 4-0. All right. Feel good about it.
Yeah. No, I think we did solid work there. And it was the first week, and we're dealing with Raiders, and we're dealing with, like, a weird time gap, and yeah, it was...
Yeah, next week will be better, because they both play on Sunday.
Okay, cool.
That'll make it a lot easier. We're going to have to do this tomorrow, by the way.
Tomorrow? Oh, because
yeah,
you're not going to
be Thursday
here.
Yeah, because I'm out Thursday and Friday.
Oh, you're out here Thursday, Friday, and Monday. You're killing me, Smalls.
I know, bro. I'm sorry. I think I've explained this before. Me and my wife mm-hmm. have a group of friends. There's six of us. All of our birthdays are between August 14th and September 26th.
Oh, that's a lot.
So we just, and two of the group, my wife and my buddy's wife are both turning 30 this year. So we're doing a little,
okay.
Little Disney trip.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, fired up.
You know what? My boys will be in Disney this weekend.
Oh, really?
No, my oldest will be.
Not oh, okay.
My youngest, he didn't get to go. He actually got a job, and so he can't go.
Hey, congratulations. Yeah. Nice job.
Yeah. Going to work in the clubhouse, sports lounge.
Oh.
Yeah, be a busser.
As one does.
Right down the street. It's a great first job. Well, first-ish job. So he's worked a little bit before at a restaurant.
Niners 32, Jets 19. 49ers going to Minnesota next week. Sounds like Christian McCaffrey might not play in that one. And this is something we were talking about earlier with Jordan Mason. If you had told me before that Christian McCaffrey was going to miss the first 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
I would have told you, if you'd said just before the season, McCaffrey's out the first 2 weeks, I would have said you're definitely losing to the Jets. And I would have the Minnesota game as a coin flip. But with the way Jordan Mason played last night, I feel so much better about it now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just think of if you're Kyle Shanahan right now. Mm-hmm. You've got to be like, oh, my gosh. Like, you watch a running back in practice, and you know what he can do. But then the way that he runs, you can't really do that in practice against your own teammates all the time. Like, if you do that, then people are going to get hurt. So for him to step up, we did have a friend of the show, Nick Wagner. He has a quote from Shanahan today.
Mm-hmm.
The Achilles is tendonitis, and that stuff comes and goes. And when it's acting up, it's something you've got to be very careful about. Christian is very diligent about that stuff. And it is, and if it was a playoff game, he made it very clear to me he believed he could go. But when you hear that type of stuff and it's not a playoff game and it's week one, and especially when you're dealing with the lower extremities like that, it was a tough decision. But hearing all the words in the long run, it made it easy. Kyle Shanahan.
Hmm.
So I get it. Like tendonitis and the... You don't want to mess with an Achilles at all. Like, if it's tendonitis, if it's, like, fraying of the tendon, like, all that stuff, it can lead to bad things. And so, yeah. He's been doing a lot of work to try to get better, and sometimes that just agitates everything and makes it even a little bit worse. Hi, you're here.
I am. Sometimes you just try to prove a point. This mic sounds like crap, but if it sounds good in your ear, we could do this.
Sounds great.
Does it?
Yeah, it doesn't sound bad
Maybe
at all.
Maybe they... Oh, it's a new mic.
They switched the mic to your right, too. We didn't know which if that was going to be up, but Jonathan just came in and dropped that mic.
Oh, he just did this now.
He just did it.
Oh, okay. I had no idea
he
did this.
You can go over there if you want.
Yeah, no, I had no idea he did this. I literally just told him.
Oh?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm very confused. I'm deeply confused.
I'm going to remove you.
I can explain it to you if you want.
We're going to add you to the stage. There you are. Hello.
So,
standoff of Damian Barling, everybody.
We were having with the microphone.
Yeah.
Yes.
The microphone. So yesterday when we came in at 7:30, I literally popped the microphone off, switched it with this one that's over here.
Mm.
And it did. So I don't. Okay. Anyways.
This is my fault. I understand.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
I had no idea Jonathan came in here, which is why I text you. We're down a mic.
I don't think whatever happened there, I don't think that mic is working.
Oh.
That's okay. I'm sorry, Damian. That's a handoff. Oh, no. And we're back.
How's this?
That's a lot better.
That's a lot better.
That sounds
great.
We
got a microphone?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
I got an intro playing. How's it going, man?
Good, man.
Impressed with the 49ers last night?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm most impressed by is I didn't think they were very good. I really didn't think they were great. Like, they settled for a lot. Like, Jake Moody, what'd he do, kick six field goals?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Insane.
They left a lot out there. But I think a lot of things happened yesterday. I think the Jets stink. I think Aaron Rodgers is trash. And I think the 49ers capitalized on it. I think their offensive line was very, very good.
Yep.
Their defense was good. I think they picked up right where they left off.
That's kind of how
that's kind of my gut is they just picked up right where they left off.
It felt like the field goal stuff was okay. This is week one, versus you went and watched. The Seahawks. The Seahawks did not like. Oh man, they got some stuff to work out. But no, I think the Seahawks won. They just didn't look very good.
Yeah.
It felt like the Niners have ascending to do and steps to take forward.
Yeah, even like the Bears won, but they looked so horrible doing it. And you were like, oh, this is...
Yeah,
this
but
is,
for them, that doesn't matter.
Number 10 in the Ringer Power Rankings, by the way, the Bears.
The Bears?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they exist to piss this station off.
That's... All right, dude.
I think that's the new goal of that.
That
website,
is so
the Ringer
excessive.
Power Rankings.
That is so excessive. But for the Bears, though, it doesn't matter.
No, I get
the Bears winning like that is fine.
Yes.
If the 49ers had beat the Jets in the same manner, it would have been.
Yes.
All right. Mm. That is not particularly good. But the fact they put up, 32
mm-hmm.
without Christian McCaffrey and a little mishap with Jordan Mason in the post game. It's good. God, they really went at Brandon Ayuk yesterday and this morning, and Peyton Manning clip is a little bit excessive,
mm-hmm.
but overall, I thought they were good. I thought they left a lot on the table, and man, if you're a 49er fan, I'd feel really, really good about where they are.
Yeah.
And their focus, you know, you worry about focus, all that. They they picked up right where they left off. That's the best way I can explain it.
No doubt. D'Lo and Casey coming up next. They're going to rock with you until 4 o'clock. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water and be nice, people. Boop!